on Buckets of Books to talk about books we've recently read. Again.
Alice and I never say which books that we're going to talk about ahead of time, so it's always like a big reveal what we're reading. But I read Paper Menagerie by Kenneth Liu, which is a book of short stories, and we've said before that I don't read that many short story authors, so that was already kind of a change. And this was a mix of, it was a lot of sci-fi, some more like magical realism, all kind of genre-y, but he played with that a lot. Like, one of them was kind of historical fiction and magical realism, sort of. And they were all really creative. I'm not a big sci-fi reader, and I was interested in the concept of sci-fi short stories, because you think of sci-fi and fantasy as being so long for the world building. And so some of them I thought, like, wow, that was cool that he was able to come up with such a creative concept in such a short space. Mm-hmm. But in some of the other ones, I was more like, okay, I've kind of, like, heard this concept before. They felt more like going off of typical tropes. But there were two magical realism stories that I thought
our favorite
were so beautiful.
I just said I love magical realism. We both do.
Oh, sorry, your audio delayed for a second. But I know there were only two, and they were by far the best ones. One of them, like, I had tears streaming down my face, and I'm not, like, a reading crier. But one of them was the title story, The Paper Menagerie, which was about, like, origami animals that his mother would make that would come to life. And the other was about, like, every person's soul took the form of a physical object, and when that object was destroyed or depleted, that person died. So the main character's soul was the form of an ice cube, and everybody talked about how unlucky she was because an ice cube isn't going to last very long. And the other was, like, a pack of cigarettes. So that was just such a good idea, but I won't spoil it, but it just had such a beautiful human kind of arc to it.
Those both sound really, really beautiful. I feel like we talk about book crying occasionally, and I also don't really cry when I read books. I think there's only, like, two that I can remember. But when I think of short science fiction, I think of Ray Bradbury, like, immediately. Who wrote, I think it's the right name, but I've only read those for school. I've only read him for school, and so I don't know, I feel like it's almost as if, like, in my mind, he contains that genre, but I like the idea of a short sci-fi just because it, like, it skips over the world building, like you said, and gets straight to the point.
Yeah, and this is different, felt like its own voice, because almost all of the short stories either, like, had an Asian protagonist or was set somewhere in Asia, so that brought a perspective that I haven't seen in sci-fi, but so some of those ideas were really creative, especially the ones that had a deeper cultural sense, but, like, for example, there was one story that was about kind of, like, AI, like, an Alexa-type character, like, kind of controlling our lives and making all of our decisions for us, and I was like, I feel like I've read the same kind of thing before, even though he was a good writer and it was interesting.
I don't know how I feel about AI stories. I feel like, actually, in my theater honors class at school yesterday, we were talking about AI because the writer's strike, like, in their contract, they included AI, like, you know, can't take their place, and so we were talking about, like, can AI, like, replace human art? And we've talked about AI before on the podcast, I think, but I feel like...
Yes, we have. you're going to get started on AI again, or like a frightened boomer.
But AI stories are, like, stories about, like, a robot that comes to life or something like that. It's, like, I feel like it's a very easy take on it to be scared of that kind of thing, or to be, like, oh, this is so sci-fi, but, like, especially now, it's, like, that's not that far off. Like, is our first reaction going to be, like, oh, this is science fantasy, or is it going to be, like, oh, this is, like, what's actually happening in our world, and, like, maybe our reaction shouldn't be, like, fight the robots, or, like, wow, what's going on, you know?
Yeah, it's true. In all of these, it's super negative and like a you know, kind of a high stakes danger thing. There's somebody in my creative writing group, and his novel is about AI, and he's kind of trying to act like the novel was written by AI, and some parts of it actually were. And so it's kind of interesting to be like, wait, did AI write this part? You know, but it's like a, I don't know, a more realistic idea.
That's cool. I like the idea of AI writing it. And also like trying to dissect which parts were written, which ones weren't. I'm actually like putting us as human writers like on the stand.
Yeah. But as you know, this whole thing makes me uncomfortable, because that I'm not worried about people's jobs. You know, I think technology is just going to always cause industries to change. What I'm really worried about is art, and like you were saying, humans being replaced by AI in professional settings, like TV writers, and even more horrifying to me, journalism, because that's such an important tenet of democracy. And if you can't really trust it, you know, then you have no credibility. But I won't go on this rant again, at least not for too long.
I won't keep it going, but journalism hadn't occurred to me as like also AI controlled, which I guess everything can be, but the idea of like, because journalism is just facts, but like it's not just facts, like there's so much more to it that makes it important. So that's interesting to think of AI controlling that.
Right, and it could like, you know, write the article, but not, at least in our current understanding of it, like information gather in the same way, like do interviews and do all the tools that we use in reporting. And so I think it could definitely write an article that seemed like how we would write one, but not, you wouldn't know what was real or not. But there are some outlets that are experimenting with like certain stories that are kind of formulaic, like a sports score write-up that's just explaining the numbers. I think some outlets have already like published that kind of thing, and I think that makes sense if the story is just like a template and you can just feed it the numbers, but I think it's a really slippery slope, and I don't like the gray area,
especially because like it's like, I don't know, this is one of the graphs that I've seen in my science classes a lot to like emphasize the importance of like labeling things. It'll be like ice cream sales and then like murders, and it'll be like all the months of the year, and so both of them are like super high in August, and we're like, ice cream relates to murder, where it's like there isn't any correlation. It's like that just based on like a human error, but then it's also like, can AI see the distinction between that and realize that there's no correlation, or is it like they're just reporting on the facts and all we get is like, oh, ice cream equals murder, which is not,
I know,
true.
Like context is everything. That's the edit I'm constantly giving to my reporters, is like, what's the context here? You're missing this context. And you know, who knows, like AI might get to the point where it can actually report like a human can, but that's already a scary thought for me. Like what do we even have anything left anymore? But that's a bit fatalist, I suppose.
Taking a turn to what I've been reading recently,
yes, please stop.
I'm in my English class this year is satire and society, and so it's a whole bunch of like different satires that change the world is the little tagline. And our first unit, we're reading Lysistrata, which is Aristophanes's ancient Greek comedy. And like I've talked about Greek dramas here before, but this one is like the craziest thing I've ever read. It's like, part of it is that the translation is like this interesting mix of like formal language that's also modern, where they'll like totally just say like, hey, what's up, or like, hey dude, like stuff like that. But then it's also like, they are still, I don't know, there is this like impersonality barrier between a lot of the characters, but it's all about women withholding sex from men in order to convince them to end the Civil War, or to end the war that they're in, which the author had intended to be the Civil War. And so the whole message underlying it all is like, war is awful, we need to end war. But it's just like, it's like, it's so explicit, and there's so much, like every single thing they say is both an innuendo for something sexual and for something related to the Civil War. So it's like, not American Civil War, the Civil War that was like happening in whatever, the BCEs. But I don't know. It's just, it's very strange. The last Greek drama I read was also with the same teacher, except it was 2 years ago. And it was like a drama. It was a tragedy. It was like an ancient myth that, like, with legends and heroes. So it's a very, very different vibe, and also just like style of reading.
Yeah, I've never heard about Greek satire plays before. That sounds pretty fun, because you do always think of it as so dramatic, and, you know, the laments of the chorus and everything. So are you liking it? Like, are you having fun reading it?
I'm definitely having fun reading it. It's the writing, like, because it's a translation, and it's not, the last play I read, like, the last full Greek drama I read was, like, very melodical, and, like, there was a super, like, there's this rhythm underlying it all, and it wasn't rhyming, but it was, like, you could feel, like, the, like, ritualism of the writing, which, like, I love, and I loved, and, like, I always try to have that in my writing, so it's, like, I loved that aspect of it, but this is a translation, and it's a comedy, so, like, that rhythm is, like, just not there, which I don't like as much, so it's, like, if this were, like, you know, formatted into modern English and modern plays, it's, like, the writing wouldn't be impeccable, but it's, like, the ideas that are, like, I don't know, holding it up. And obviously, it's not the original language, so it's different. But, actually, the other, the same class that I was talking about AI with, my theater class, we were also, we're reading about Aristotle right now and his poetics and, like, what he has to say about ancient theater. So it's, like, lots of Greek drama in my life right now. But he has all these ideas on, like, theater, like, a hero must be a tragic hero, and it must be a man who's, like, high status, and he has, like, magnitude. His problems, like, carry weight and, like, importance. And this is, like,
the Joseph Campbellism.
But it's very much so not any of the characters in this play, but, like, the characters are powerful and they're important. And so, I don't know, it's just interesting, like, to see the difference between the two of them.
Yeah. That's interesting. I don't read so many translations that I have a firm opinion about this, but I'm curious if you do. You know, whether a translator's role should be to be as literal and direct as possible, or if a translator should have more of a poet's soul, if you will, and, you know, bring the feel to it as opposed just to the direct translation of the words.
I love this question. I think, okay, first, I know we both read Interpreter of Maladies, or at least some Jhumpa Lahiri, and I read Interpreter of Maladies last year, and so it's all about, like, it's mostly about, like, culture and, like, families within, like, diasporic cultures, but it's also, like, it's all about interpretation and, like, how is life interpreted through cultures. And then there's this question of, like, what is, like, the difference between interpretation and translation. And I think this play is, like, very much so, like, the version that I'm reading is very much so a translation, where it is taking the words and is putting them into what we see now. But then there are also these things where it's, like, yes, technically this word translates to, like, warship, but, like, if it was in English, it would be referring to battleship, as in, like, the game, which, like, carries, like, a totally different, like, connotation of, like, you know, like, it's a game, it's not war, it's not this massive item of war. So it's, like, where's the line between interpreting in that sense, but also translating to get the meaning across, and then interpreting to get, like, the flow of the words and the, like, what the reading experience is beyond, like, the literal definition of the word.
Right. it's all about the context, like my favorite word. But you bring up Jhumpa Lahiri, and I was going to save this for next time, but I just read Whereabouts, which is the book that she wrote in Italian and then translated into English from there. And it's really interesting. I don't quite like it as much, but it's interesting and good because it reads like a translation. Like, it feels like it was, the writing feels kind of like simple, you know, because it feels like more of that direct kind of translation rather than a poetic one. Mm-hmm. And so it makes me want to learn Italian and, you know, get the full effect of her writing. But it's kind of funny that her own translation, I believe it's her own translation, that she didn't outsource that to somebody else, has this, I don't know, pared down quality to it that doesn't ring as strongly as the writing that I'm used to from her.
That's so cool that she, like, did that for herself, but then also, like...
It's totally cool, yeah.
That you can, like, see the difference between her writing. Like, she's such a prolific writer, and she's such a beautiful writer, and that, like, you can see the difference between her... when it's still her style, just in a different language. But it's also, like, I've noticed, like, in my French class, which it's, like, half of the kids in the class are native speakers, and so it's, like, they'll be saying these things where it's, like, I can translate what they're saying literally, but it's not, like, I don't know, like, even if it's, like, a curse word where, like, the connotations of it just, like, don't come across as important to me, because in English, I'm like, oh, this is a curse word. I know that this word, like, the sound of it, like, carries weight, but then, like, in French, it's, like, this is just another vocab that you're, like, teaching me. So it's, like, even that where it's, like, I understand the exact translation of what they're saying, it's, like, I don't know, like, is it the same word that I'm understanding in English?
Right, and, like, just when you said sound, I was thinking about other translations I've read where they're using, like, alliteration or rhyme or something, and I'm wondering how many, like, how far they had to leap from the original meaning to force those words together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, like, I think a new translation of the Odyssey came out, like, recently. My mom was telling me that there's, like, been a lot of controversy around it because people are like, oh, we don't need, like, another version of the Odyssey. But, like, every single version is different, and it's, like, the most famous story ever. And it's probably been translated, like, just under the Bible, where it's, like, this has been translated, like, hundreds of thousands of times, and we still don't even, like, agree or understand one common definition of it.
Yeah, it does. It just makes you want to learn the language. I think, so there's just upset that just another one exists, that we are giving space for that.
I guess. I think
it's offering something different, you know, that's that person's prerogative, and if there's a market for it.
Yeah, totally. I don't know. I think that's a super interesting idea, though, of translation versus poetic interpretation.
Maybe you should be a translator.
That'd be cool. One of my best friend's mom is a translator, but it's for her native language, so that's a bit different.
Right, yeah, but you could translate French into English.
True.
It'd be a fun exercise.
I would love to be, like, a polyglot or something. I think that's so fascinating. And
yeah.
Impossibly difficult. But I would settle for a couple languages.
Yeah, that'd be admirable. Did we talk ourselves out on this?
I don't know. We went kind of all over the place.
We had a lot to say about translation.
But I think this is a good episode, and we'll be back next week on Buckets of Books.